Welcome back to the Women's Vitality Summit. This is Dr. Keisha Ewers, your host, and we are talking about caring for yourself, body, and soul, women's vitality. And my guest today that I'm so excited to be interviewing is Dr. Susan Albers, who's a New York Times bestselling author and a clinical psychologist at the Cleveland Clinic, who specializes in eating issues, weight loss, body image concerns, and mindfulness. After obtaining a master's and doctorate degree from the University of Denver, Dr. Albers completed an APA internship at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, and a postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford University in California. She conducts mindful eating workshops across the country. Dr. Albers is the author of 6 mindful eating books, including Eat Cue, 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food, Eating Mindfully, Eat, Drink, and Be Mindful, and Mindful Eating 101. Her work has been featured in O, the Oprah Magazine, Family Circle, Shape, Prevention Magazine, Self, Health, Fitness Magazine, Vanity Fair, Natural Health, The Wall Street Journal, and on Dr. Oz. Susan is a contributor to the Huffington Post and Psychology Today. Welcome to the summit, Susan. I'm so excited to have you on this session.
Thank you so much. It is such a pleasure to be here with you today and talking about, you know, a topic I am so passionate about. So it is wonderful to spread the word.
Well, you know, the thing that this summit is all about is women's vitality. And I always kind of remind everybody that vitality is our life energy, our life juice, our force, you know, our passion to live our life purpose. And so often I see, and this is why I did the summit, women in my office that are drained of their vitality. And I find that a lot of times this has to do, you know, this draining of vitality has to do with being overstressed, overscheduled, overly self-critical. And a lot of times women, and probably men too, but I see this often in women, turn to food and have unhealthy relationships with food as a result of that lack of vitality. Or their relationship with food is a drainer of their vitality. So I'd love to start that. Like, what do you see as the relationship of food and eating for women and their life purpose and their passion and their juice and their joy or their vitality?
Right. Well, I definitely agree with you. I think that at the heart of our energy, our vitality, we have to have great nutrition to give us the energy to do all the amazing things that we do as women in one day. I mean, there's so many of us who are running around all over the place, you know, on that treadmill of life, and we have nothing behind it powering it. And when I work with my clients and we drill down and I say to them, and I would ask anybody this question right now who's listening, to think about what have you had to eat today so far? And I just asked a client of mine that just yesterday. And she really had to think for a minute, as we all do, because, again, we're so busy. And she said, well, I had like a handful of cashews, and I had some goldfish crackers from my toddler's snack box. And that was it. And it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and she said, well, tonight, you know, I'll sit down with my family and then I'll eat. But when we really looked at that cycle, you know, in the evening, she found herself just eating way too much, feeling really out of control. But it made sense because her vitality, her energy was completely drained throughout the day because she was running, running, running. So what I try and help people to do, and particularly women in my practice with mindful eating, is to find a way to incorporate in easy ways mindful eating into their lives so that they feel more energized, that it is not stressful, because that's probably one of the biggest obstacles that I see is that people say, I don't have time right now, I'm too stressed out, which we all are. So the techniques that I incorporate and teach my clients are easy, they're simple, and the things that you can do like within a minute or less. You don't have to change your whole lifestyle. And that's really been my goal and my purpose, being, you know, a professional myself and a mom and somebody who knows how busy and hectic life is, that it has to be simple, easy things that we can do.
Well, I think that is key, because when I'm in my office and I give a woman a suggestion to do some form of self-care, I often get an eye roll, you know, the eye roll that says, or even tears that say, you know, oh my gosh, if you ask me to do one more thing in my life, it's going to tip me over, right? And so easy is really, really important. So I want to circle back, though, because your emphasis is on mindful eating. And I just want to start with a good foundation so that everyone understands and is on the same page about what that means.
Sure, yes. And I think that's important to do because we see a lot, you probably are starting to see a lot in the media, a lot of celebrities, and people are talking about mindful eating, but there's a lot of myths that go along with it as well. So first of all, it is not a diet or a fad diet. So if you're a chronic dieter who's been up and down on that diet roller coaster, I'm sure you're doing a sigh of relief because it's not that. There's no starving. There's no wrestling with yourself, guilt, shame, any of that. So it's not a diet. It's more about how to eat than what to eat. And so probably every single day you are just inundated with a list of don't eat this food or do eat this food, don't eat sugar, don't eat gluten, you know, all of these things. And really, that is not what I focus on with the people that I work with, the readers of all of my books, Eating Mindfully. It's more about the how to eat because really at the end of the day, that is what we struggle with. We struggle with how do you stop emotional eating? How do you stop eating that bag of chips right in the middle and close it up and walk away? It's all of these behavioral things that we just really struggle with. And we have really, really good intentions to say, okay, you wake up in the morning, you say, okay, today is the day I'm going to eat mindfully. And then you get to about noon, and as we said, that energy and vitality is drained out of you, and it's really tough to do. So the focus of mindful eating is about awareness. And that is really, in some ways, how simple and easy it can be. Let me give you a pretty common example of mindless eating that we all do quite often. You get home, stressful day, you've taken your child to kindergarten and they've had a meltdown, and then you've come home and you've helped with homework and you put the laundry in and you're exhausted by the end of the day. And you go into the living room and you flop down and you're ready to watch Netflix and you say, okay, I'm going to get something to eat. And we use that time to unwind. So you get a bowl of potato chips, you start eating, and you eat in what my clients call this robotic, mindless way, just popping one in after another, and you get to the bottom of the bowl and you say, oh my gosh, I have no idea. You know, I haven't tasted one bite of this whole bowl. You know, you've just mindlessly zoned out. And we do that so often with food that it doesn't take a lot to eat. We just, you know, pick up our fork or put it in our mouth. It's so much so that we can eat an entire plate of food and not taste one bite. So what mindful eating really is about is shifting that awareness and that focus back into the moment. So being able to, you know, taste those potato chips, having them as a snack, getting out of all the automatic routines that we have around food. For example, yesterday I was at work, and it was lunchtime. You know, our lunchtime is between 12 and 1, and I was asking my coworker if she wanted to go to lunch, and she's like, oh, you know, I already ate just about an hour ago, but yeah, I'll go. And I said, no, you don't have to go, you know, if you've already eaten, or, you know, we can get coffee or whatever. But it was such a great example of how, you know, we have habits. We eat at 12 o'clock on the dot, whether we're hungry or not. We socialize around eating. We have tons of habits around eating. And so if you're listening, I would say the number one thing that you can do to start eating more mindfully, and it's not even changing anything, it's really just observing what your habits are around food. And if you really drill down and you take a really close look at what you do throughout a day, my guess is you'll be just amazed and surprised at some of the ways in which we automatically eat food. There's a really interesting study by one of my favorite researchers, Brian Wansink out of Cornell, and he recently looked at kitchens and households. And so he went in with his team of researchers to different households around the university, and he looked at what people had on their counters. And he found that people who kept food on their counters, specifically if they had soda on their counter, they weighed 26 pounds more than people who did not keep soda on their counter. And also the same with crackers. It was like something like 14 pounds more by having this just sitting out on their counter. And that's because we get into this mindless habit of you see food and you reach for it automatically. You're passing the counter, you pick it up, and you eat it without really even thinking. Mindful eating is different, is that, you know, we turn on our awareness so that instead of reaching for food in an automatic way, we really slow down and be in the moment. Sometimes easier said than done.
You know, I think this is so important, and I've interviewed Dr. Wansink twice on my radio show on Healthy You Radio because I think his research is so important, and one of the things he talks about is this idea that what you just said earlier, that we wake up in the morning, we have a bucket full of willpower, and it's, you know, we have so many different choices in the era that we live in right now. You get on your computer and you're confronted and inundated with things that you actually have to have willpower over, you know, not buying the thing that floats by while you're reading the news that you looked at yesterday, you know. And so that by the end of the afternoon, when a lot of people are heading into the kitchen to look for something to perk them back up, your bucket is really, really kind of diminished. And so the ways that we, what we put in our kitchens, the way we surround ourselves with food, how we think about our energy and what's going to pick us back up, all these things go into what our body weight looks like. And I think that that's really important, what you just said, like just this very simple thing of not having food out on your counter. Who knew, right?
Right, right. I mean, yeah. And that's, we live in this very mindless eating environment, and my clients often get really hard on themselves. They're like, I really want to eat mindfully. Why is it so hard? And I say, well, look around you. We are inundated with food all of the time. In the town where I live, they just implemented a 24-hour cookie delivery service. So you can get on your computer, and 10 minutes later, hot cookies will arrive at your doorstep if you want them. So,
oh, my goodness.
It's so easy. And there's, I live near a university, and they just implemented a vending machine that will create pizza. So no longer will people have to, you know, college students have to wait to order the pizza and have it delivered. It will be done within a matter of minutes right in front of them. So, I mean, we live in this
That's
world.
That's discouraging.
I know. It's a surprise. I mean, and the list is just kind of endless. Not just for college students, but for all of us, that we're just faced with choices all day long. And by the end of the day, and I think about this term a lot in psychology, we call it decision fatigue. And it's so appropriate because by the end of the day, we are just maxed out in the decisions we have to make, not just about food, but about, you know, what am I going to wear today? Where am I going to go? How am I, you know, all the decisions that we have to make, that by the end of the day, making those decisions about food can just feel way too overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. So I had a client yesterday who was in my office and was saying, I have a history of bulimia, which of course is an eating disorder of binging and purging, and I'm worried that it's coming back because of the stress that I feel over these different family crises that are going on. And I find that I'm, you know, my husband doesn't eat the same way I do, and so when we sit down to watch a show together or the news in the evening, he pulls out a bag of corn chips and I start in on it. So mm-hmm. What are some tips that you can give somebody like that who is in a either or with food, either I'm in good relationship with it or I'm not, and when the temptations come up like that, when there's someone that you live with that doesn't have the same values around eating that you do, how can they work with that?
Oh, that's such a tough one. I think so many people face that when their family is not on board. And I really bring it back to them and the moment. And this is what I found, which is very interesting, is that when somebody embraces mindful eating and they start to demonstrate it and show, you know, in their house, in front of their kids and their partner, it's amazing how often they serve as such a great role model, and the other person starts to unconsciously do what you're doing. So really, one of the best ways to get your significant others, your family on board is just to really be a good role model, to start doing this yourself, and you'll be amazed at how often they come on board. And really just focusing on yourself. Like you're saying, most of us get into this all or nothing thinking of, like, I'm either on this diet or I'm doing great or I'm failing and doing miserable. So what I love about mindful eating is that it has this really positive mindset that we're just focusing on the moment. We have no other control over the past or the future, but just right now. And so I'm going to go through a list of 5 things, really, really easy things that you can do to jumpstart your mindful eating. If you're somebody who, you know, doesn't know much about it, if you do these 5 things, and believe me, they're really easy, it's going to get you started. And I also, on my website, eatingmindfully.com, you can go there and there's a download that you can print out some of these things, hang it on your refrigerator, give it to a client if you have one. And so you can have it handy. Okay, so here's number 1. You ready?
Go for it.
Okay, number 1. And again, these sound really easy, but they're kind of sometimes more complicated than we think. Number 1 is the first, I call it the 5 S's of mindful eating. And the number 1 S is to sit down. And to just have a seat. You know, we often are nibbling in front of the refrigerator or snacking in the car or eating right out of the bag. And you will find that you will enjoy food more and eat less when you give eating your full attention. And so my motto with this is only eat off your feet. There was a recent study that looked at people who ate chocolate, and they found that people ate 5 times more if they were eating and walking than if they were sitting down. So that's something that we can all work on to help to focus our attention. So that's number 1.
Great.
The second S is to slowly chew. Now, you know, we all know that chewing slower can really help. But again, it's one of those unconscious habits that we all have to eat quickly. And what research indicates is that we eat in tandem with the people that we're eating with. So if you eat with a fast eater, lightning speed, it's likely that you will as well. So my challenge to you today, anybody who's listening, is to tune in to how quickly is the person that you're eating with chewing and trying to just slow that down a little bit. And one way that you can also eat slower, and this is one of my very favorite tips, it's very fun, you can try it today, is to eat with your non-dominant hand. So I'm right-handed, eating with my left hand, putting that fork in the left hand. And what you're going to find is that it's going to automatically slow you down because you got to think about it a little bit harder. It's like writing with your non-dominant hand. You can write with your opposite hand often, but you got to like slow down and really give it more of your attention. Same with using a fork or a spoon. So that, and it's based on a research study that looked at popcorn. They sent people into a movie theater and they gave them popcorn and they asked them to eat with their non-dominant hand. And what they found was that the people who ate with their opposite hand ate 30% less. So it's very simple, easy tips like this that can make a huge difference to your eating.
You know, I just did a little Facebook Live post last month, and what I suggested that I found in my own life, and I love what you just said, is that in Ayurvedic medicine, there's this understanding that your stomach is only as big as your fist, and so you should only eat in a one setting what you can hold in your hands. Yeah. And so, you know, I started thinking, well, what serving dish would match that? And I realized I lived for 3 years in Japan when I was a little girl, and I thought, oh, a Japanese rice bowl.
Yeah.
And then if you eat with chopsticks, it really slows you down. So I just did this little video about this, about, you know, chewing, because if you're not shoveling things in with your fork, you have to slow down before you can get another bite. You've really chewed very well with chopsticks if you're not a native chopstick user. And then really putting your food in this one, you know, in a rice bowl like that gives you the serving size, and then you can eat that slowly, let your body understand that's what's happening, you know, give it the message that it's, let it have the message it's full. So it sounds like I was right on track.
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't realize that that was something that we shared. You spent some time in Japan, and I lived in Japan for a short time as well.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, which is actually, it's one of the ways that I became connected with mindfulness. I had read the word in the past. I was a young adult, like a college student. And when I was there, I really didn't, I knew what the word meant on an intellectual level, but I didn't really kind of feel it or really understand it until I was there. And it was the first, and actually it was one of the first times in my life that I was very mindful of my own eating because the food was so different than anything I had experienced. I'm from Ohio, so as you can imagine, we were very like meat and potato states. I grew up with a strong history of food in my family. My great-grandfather owned a grocery store, and as stories about him go, he would he was Italian. And so he would pick at the food all day long. Like, I come from a family of mindless eaters. And then so much so that he had to get out of the grocery business, and he opened up an orchard. So one of my first experiences as a child with food is that every summer we would go to the orchards, and we would pick cherries, and we would pick all kinds of different fruits. But the cherries was particularly significant because I would remember being up in a cherry tree, and my great-grandmother would say to me, are you eating those cherries? You know, it was one of those one for me, one for the bucket, one for
right.
me, one for the bucket. And so, you know, we were very connected with where food comes from, where you grow it, eating it, obviously, as right off the tree. And my other side of the family are farmers from Ohio. And my grandparents ate everything that they grew. My grandmother's recipes are handwritten, and they involve everything that they got from their farm, and that's it. So then when I went to Japan, you know, I experienced this very different kinds of food. And what I noticed is that it naturally slowed me down because the food was so unfamiliar that I would ask myself, what, you know, what is this? How, what does it taste like? What is the texture? What is the flavor? How does it smell? And so it was really, and I didn't even put that label on it at the time, my first mindful eating experience. And now I use that as a little example of what I do with people in my mindful eating workshops, is that we take some chocolate, and I particularly love to use chocolate because we struggle with chocolate so much, and do these mindful eating experiments and exercises where people slow down, they eat the chocolate in a very different way than they're often used to. Often we're popping one piece of chocolate in our mouth after another, thinking about the next piece before we even finish the one that we have. And then just really having them slow down. And that eating experience of slowing down, tasting, savoring food, really changes our relationship to it and our connection. And what's interesting is that whenever I do that mindful eating exercise, one of the first things that we do is I have people really listen to opening up the piece of chocolate, and they're listening to the crinkle of the foil and smelling it, is that they tell me every single time after that experience, they are really tuned in. They can't open a Hershey Kiss or a little candy bar without doing it in that way of really listening, looking at it, and savoring it in a way that they just hadn't done before. So I guess my point is that when you experience mindful eating, it changes your relationship to food forever. The way you think about food, the way you taste it, the way you approach it, how you choose it. So it's very, very powerful experience.
You know, I think this is a really important thing that you're saying. I did this 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat where you're silent and you don't even make eye contact with other humans. You don't write in your journal. You don't get on your phone. It's taken away. And it's just silence. It's you, yourself, and you in this meditation practice for 10 days. And one of the things they do is your meals are served to you so that you don't have to think about food. So in the morning you have breakfast and you eat that, and then you have lunch, and then dinner is more of a snack, like a tea time in Britain, where you get a piece of fruit and you get to have some sort of herbal tea. And I remember thinking, ooh, I get low blood sugar. I don't know if this is going to be enough, you know, or where's my protein? And, you know, and just kind of going through this little bit of, oh, no, you know, because this is so regimented. If my blood sugar crashes at 7, what am I going to do? Not realizing, because I did this so many years ago, that so often what we eat, you know, well, not so often, every time, every single thing that you put in your mouth in the morning is setting you up for how you're going to be in the evening. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I ate a really healthy, wonderful breakfast in the morning that was well balanced, and another one at lunch. And then when I had my apple in the afternoon, when we go meditate again later, I could feel that apple, and I treasured it because it was the only thing I was eating. Mm-hmm. And so I would feel that on my tongue and really taste as it went down. And then during meditation in the evening, I could feel that apple digesting. Yeah. I could feel it going into my tissues. I could feel where it was going. It was really fascinating because it was just me, myself, and me. And there was no distraction. In fact, it was made, you know, this environment makes sure you don't have any distraction from this process. And so that changed my life and my relationship to food, because I thought, wow, how often would my food choices switch if I really spent this kind of attention and time on every single bite, savoring it and feeling it nourish the cells of my body in this way. And I think our lives are so frenetic and so overscheduled and so busy that people don't even have this experience of doing this.
Right, right. Absolutely, I agree. And imagine that now you pick up an apple and you never look at it in the same way again.
Right.
If someone wants to walk through that experience of savoring chocolate with me, I have a little clip on YouTube of how to savor chocolate. So you can just type it in YouTube, my name and mindful eating and eating chocolate, and it walks. We'll walk together through that process of eating a piece of chocolate mindfully. So if you are somebody who really struggles with chocolate, you have to watch this video, because it will change your relationship to chocolate forever. So just to kind of rewind and give you again those three, the first three S's of mindful eating. And so it's to sit down, to slowly chew, and number three was just what we talked about, to savor. For each bite, make it a mindful bite. Smell, taste, notice, look. And what research indicates is that first bite is actually the most flavorful, because after you start eating, you become habituated to the taste. So that very first bite, if you don't do any other mindful eating, make that first bite the most mindful one. Tune in, ask yourself, how do I like it? You know, is it something I love, or just it's mediocre? We eat a lot of mediocre food, so, you know, in that first bite, if you say to yourself, oh, you know, I'm not sure, you know, it's a good time to change your options. So that sit down, slowly chew, savor. And then the fourth S is to simplify. Simplify your environment. Just like we were talking about with Dr. Wansink, I would challenge people today to go in their kitchen or sit at their desk and look around and see if you're if your environment is helping you to eat in a mindful way, or if it's pushing you towards mindless eating. So that often includes food being out of sight. You know, and like I say, I love food. I'm a food lover. So I'm not saying, you know, get rid of all the treats and good food in your house. No, absolutely not. It's putting it in a strategic location so that we cut down on that autopilot eating, that you just pass it, you see it, you unconsciously reach for a handful and eat it. You know, what we want to foster is these really conscious choices of what it is that we're eating. So that would be the fourth S, is to simplify, you know, and what I like, my motto is insight in mind, out of sight, out of mind. And then finally, the fifth S is to, and this is one of my very favorites, is to smile between bites. And smiling creates this really brief pause between your current bite and the next one. It creates this little bit of a gap. And during that gap, you ask yourself if you're satisfied in that moment. And my motto is take a breath to manage stress. And so in that between bites, you're taking that little smile. And also another added benefit is that when we smile, it kicks off that serotonin and those feel-good chemicals in your brain, which helps us to reduce emotional eating. And so in one of my books, I have 6 books. One of them is called 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food. It talks about many different ways that we can calm and soothe our emotions without any food whatsoever, some really creative, innovative things. And smiling in this context and is there. There's in the book, I call it, there's smile yoga, which is a whole different topic. But in this context, we are going to just take a really brief smile and then take that next bite. So again, just to kind of sum up, it's sit down, slowly chew, savor, simplify, and to smile. And like I said, you can go to my website, eatingmindfully.com, and get this as a download and put on your refrigerator.
Yeah, great tips. So what are some, we're going to add another S in there that can get in the way of all this. I hear women ask me all the time, or even tell me, I sabotage myself. They just say that. I'm a self-saboteur. What are some ways that people sabotage themselves when they're in this process and really trying, and I'm going to put this in air quotes because I disagree with this terminology, trying to be good. I think when we set ourselves up as good or bad, we are already shooting ourselves in the feet.
Right, right. Well, some of the things, the one that you just mentioned, that's biggest self-sabotager is what is self-talk. What is it that you're telling yourself about what's happening with your eating? So probably this sounds familiar to people who've tried to change their eating. It's I'm too stressed. I can't do it. It hasn't worked in the past. Nobody in my family is successful. Nobody's on board with my family. All of these no, 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 no's, or I can't, I can't, I can't. So one of the first things that I tell people to do is to really listen to what is happening in your mind and, you know, get that little mindful voice on your shoulder that is listening and hears what your mind is saying but doesn't buy it. Just because we have a thought doesn't mean it's a fact. And I really emphasize that with my clients to listen to what they're saying. And if you don't believe that it can happen, it is just our thoughts direct where we're going. So number one is really understanding that mindful eating can happen and talking to yourself in this positive way. The other one, so the one that stops people in their tracks is, I am too stressed out right now to make any changes. And that's the nice thing about mindful eating is you really dive into it and you start reading about the tips is that it is intended to reduce stress instead of create stress. Now, diets create stress because you have to change what it is you're eating. A lot of times you're starving. And this actually helps reduce stress because what you're doing is you're really tuning in to just exactly what your body needs and you're meeting those needs. So it reduces your stress level, and it slips it into what you're already doing at the moment and just doing what you're doing a little bit more mindful. So here's another example. So I'd ask anybody who's listening to think about what's one thing that you do well already with your eating. You know, often we're looking for the problem. We're looking for the potholes. But you're doing something right and well right now. And, you know, boosting that just a little bit and being more mindful of that can go a long way. You know, we try and stop all these negative behaviors that we have, and I always say start a healthy new behavior instead of stopping an old stuck one, because we wrestle with those things that we say stop, stop, stop doing. But new healthy habits push those old habits out of the way. So think about what you can start doing today instead of what you can stop doing today.
That's great. Great advice and wisdom. So, you know, you talked about a book that you've written about some things that you can do to boost your vitality that don't involve food.
Yeah.
Let's end with a few of those.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to give you one of my favorites, or yeah, a few of my favorites that you can do to boost your energy level. Very easy, natural ways, don't involve food whatsoever. So here's one that I do in my office. So I'm in my office all day long, and I'm sitting. And so that's a real energy drainer to me, is sitting all day long. So what I do, instead of going down to the vending machines between clients, I'll get up, and I'll do what are called doorway stretches. So I'll stand in my open doorway. I'll put either hand on the sides of the door frame of an open door about shoulder length, and then I really gently kind of lean in on my weight and then straighten up and then lean in again, almost like you're doing sort of push-ups on the door frame. And this helps to get the blood going, the oxygen circulating again, to get to boost my energy up as well. Another tip that I have outlined in my book, and I have a little video on it as well, is to do what I call a squeegee breath. And let's end with this. And if you're listening, you can do this with me as well. We're just going to do it really quick, and then you can just do it at your own pace. So if I'm feeling low energy and I'm just dragging and I need to pump up my energy level, I do what is called a squeegee breath, and this is to release stress. So if you want to close your eyes at the moment, if you're listening, and I want you to imagine that that you have a squeegee, you know, those kind that you use on the windows to wash the windows, and imagine starting at the top of your head, and you're going to squeegee all the way down your body, all the way down to your toes. And as you're breathing out, you're going to imagine all the negativity, all the stress, that just kind of like this black water rushing out from underneath your toes. And when you breathe in, you're breathing in the nice, clean water or air and thoughts. So take that deep breath in and the positive, and imagine that clean water coming in, and then squeegee down as you're breathing out, and all the stress is running out from beneath your toes, just like that. That dirty water out, and breathe in and out, until you feel calm and energized again. Because that oxygen, it goes to your brain and helps you to think more clearly and make better decisions. So these are just a couple tips that I have for you. Like I said, my book, 50 Ways to Soothe Yourself Without Food, is just full of them. And my website as well, which I would welcome you to go to, eatingmindfully.com. Because I love sharing all of this information with you, and helping people along this journey of mindful eating, or join my Facebook page. I post inspiration and quotes and things like that, because I want to share with you everything I know about this topic.
So we also have all the contact information and some bonus material from Dr. Albers on womensvitalitysummit.com on her speakers page. So lots of different amazing tips and words of wisdom from you, Dr. Albers. I'm sure your kids, this is one of the things that I think as a mother of four that's so important, is that our children get this information. So you've taught them squeegee breathing, right?
You know, and it's funny because we'll be out in the world somewhere and in the grocery store, and all of a sudden they'll be doing these yoga poses, and people are just like floored that this is happening. I really believe in teaching kids how to regulate their emotions early in their life, because if we don't, they're going to be doing it with food later. So really investing in helping them to do squeegee breaths, to do yoga exercises, to relax and calm and soothe their nerves without food, as early as you can, is really important. And you can do it with them. I mean, we'll do the squeegee breath together. When we're doing homework and people are really frustrated, we just take a moment and let's do the squeegee breath, and we are all good.
So powerful. And, you know, whenever I get teenagers in my practice and I'm teaching them these different stress-relieving techniques and things that I do, I say, you're going to be so much further ahead than most adults, you know, by knowing this now before you go off to college. So this is a really important thing that I just want to encourage all the moms listening, that you take all of this information and practice it with your entire family, because it's never too late for you to learn it, and it's definitely never early enough for your kids to be learning it.
Right, and I think that's a good point. It's not too late. Don't tell yourself, oh, I didn't learn these as a kid, so I'm hopeless. That is not the case. These are things you can do today.
Right. And when you have a family, you have accountability partners, because I think kids are the most amazing accountability partners ever.
They tell you on everything.
Absolutely. They do.
I've had them say to me, "Mommy, is that mindful eating?" And I'll be like, wow, they are really watching.
I know, they are. And they're mind mapping us so closely. And so they know if you're not in integrity with what you say and what you do. So they're
Absolutely.
Great for accountability. So rope them in and use them as your community, because they're learning along with you. And it's just fantastic. Dr. Albers, thank you so much for sharing even this tiny bit of wisdom in this short amount of time with our listeners and teaching us all about mindful eating.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And remember to eat, drink, and be mindful.
I'll end with that. Have a fantastic day, everybody. Until next time.